Hello, everybody. This is Neil Ewers in Madison, Wisconsin, and this is a podcast on the Zoom Handy 4-track digital recorder. It's a very impressive recorder. It does lots of things and does them very well. Few little problems with the accessibility. Maybe they can be dealt with, maybe they can't, depending on how much trouble you want to go to. But all in all, a pretty good sound. In fact, speaking of sound, I'd like to do something to compare this with the Eddyroll. I just took the windscreen off this microphone. By the way, these are cardioid microphones as opposed to omnidirectional microphones as on the R9. And I want to switch from what I'm doing now to a part of the Eddyroll podcast I made to see if you can hear any difference in microphones, and especially see if you can hear any difference in microphone preamplifier hiss. I'm about 10 inches from this mic, just as I was with the Eddyroll. So now let's switch from this recorder to the Eddyroll R9. And if you have really good speakers, you will notice that there is a certain amount of hiss with these microphones. It's either the mics or the mic preamp, or both. Well, isn't that interesting? Much quieter. And because this comes with a windscreen, which I now have back on, I can talk much closer to it and even more increase the signal over the noise. I've had this unit out with me over the weekend recording various things, and much of what I've said in the podcast that I'm about to play for you has already been made even before I went out this weekend. So I'll have a few little bits of pieces to add to what I said earlier, and a few things to take out and change, because I've discovered a few things along the way. One slight problem it has, and I'm working with Zoom to see if this is a problem with all the recorders or just this one. They're sending me another one tomorrow. When I pull out the AC adapter, and that's exactly what I'm using now, I'm plugged into the wall, listen very carefully to what you hear. There is a slight noise, and this is the case no matter what battery I use. So either this is a problem with the recorder, or it is the nature of the beast. And if it's the nature of the beast, that could be a problem, because it actually is louder on external microphones, or at least some of them. Now I'd like to describe the physical layout of this recorder, but I'd like to do it in two passes. One, just a brief description of the buttons, and then something about what they do. On the top of the recorder are the microphones. More to say about them later. On the left-hand side of the recorder, there are two jacks. The first one you come to is line out. The second one is headphone out. Below that is the volume to the headphones, which is a thumb knob that you push up and down, but it's round, so it sort of goes up toward the top of the recorder and down toward the bottom. Barely sticks out of the recorder enough to be turned. Below that is the on-off switch. More in a moment. Below that is the USB plug. On the right-hand side is the jog dial. Under that are three mic attenuation switches. The first one is for the internal mic, the second one being for the left channel of the external mic, and the third one being for the right channel of the external mic, and they all have three positions. The first click lowers the signal by about 10 dB, and the second click lowers it about 15 dB from that, or about 25 dB down. The bottom of the recorder has three plugs, the left and right input plugs for the external mic and line in, and the AC adapter. On the back of the recorder, there's almost nothing, except for the battery compartment, which we'll get to in a second. The front and back edges of the recorder are rounded. So on the front left edge of the recorder, sort of on the curve, but more toward the front, are four push buttons. They are marked A, B, C, and D. Among other things, they changed the sample rate of the recorder. 96, 48, 44.1, and MP3, and the kbps of the bitrate can be changed in the menus. Across from button A, on the front, is a similar-looking button, which is the record button. More about that later. Toward the lower end of the middle of the front is a joystick with the ability to push it straight in, and there are four little lines, right, left, up, and down, so that it can be pushed right, left, up, and down. All right, now a more general description. First of all, the size is about like the Eddyroll, a little bit longer, plus the microphones stick out on top of the recorder, as opposed to sticking out the side, like they do in the Eddyroll. They are enclosed in a sort of, well, they aren't enclosed. There's some wire framework around the mics. They aren't just little round mics sticking up. But the mics are pointing 90 degrees in toward each other. And they are not as large as the mics on the Eddyroll, but with the wire frame on top, it does look about as large. And my wife said when she first saw it, boy, that's a funny-looking recorder, but then she said the same thing about the Eddyroll. Slight correction to what I just said. The mics aren't pointing in at 90 degrees each. Each one is pointed at 45 degrees, thus making a total of 90 degrees, which is XY. These mics actually stick up more than they do on the Eddyroll. They're sort of built into the Eddyroll and sort of come out of the sides. These actually, for any of you who have or have seen the Rode NT4 microphone, it's about like that. The mics actually extrude out of the recorder and sort of stick up on top, pointing toward each other. Okay, on the right side of the unit, at the very top, is the jog dial. It's actually not a dial, it's more of a jog button. It's like if you've had a mini disc recorder, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's a little pointer that sticks out on the edge of what looks like a semicircle. And it only goes one click each time you push it down or up. So if you push it up toward the top of the unit, it springs back. If you push it down toward the bottom of the unit, it springs back up to the middle. This is basically how you get through the menus, and we'll talk more about the menus later. Below the jog dial are three mic attenuation switches. They each have three positions, high, medium, and low. The top one is for the internal mic. The bottom two are for the right and left channels of the external mics, so you can actually set one mic in a stereo pair louder than the other. Why, I don't know. And that's all there is on the right-hand side of the recorder. On the left side, starting at the top, you have a line-in jack, a headphone jack. Underneath the headphone jack, there is a manual knob that controls the volume of the headphones, and below that is the on-off switch. Now, here's one of the nice features of this recorder. The on-off switch is not a push button. Up is on, down is off, so you know whether it's on or off. There's no, well, did I push it once, and now is it on, and now is it off? And when it comes on, and you've got headphones on, as soon as it boots up, there is a click, very soft one, but if you've got a file on the recorder, one way you discover whether it's on is to press play, and we'll talk about play in a moment, and if you hear it, then it's on. And below the on-off switch is the USB port, and that's all there is on the left side. On the bottom, you have some interesting things. You have the plugs for external microphones. And I'm going to walk around the house while I'm talking about this. The plugs are combination XLR and quarter-inch plugs. The quarter-inch plug goes into a hole that is inside the circle where the pins of the XLR plug go. In other words, there's a hole, you stick the quarter-inch plug in it. Around the outside of this quarter-inch plug are three holes, which are the jack holes for the XLR plug. You obviously can't plug them both in at the same time, but it's a really kind of nifty combination. Saves a lot of room not to have to have two kinds of plugs. And between those jacks is the jack for the AC power. On the front of the recorder are four buttons on the left-hand side, one above the other. Now, I'm told they do two things. I'm not sure what the second thing is. The first thing, and I think Lynette said this on her podcast, is that they are what you press to control the bit rate and the sampling rate that you want. A says 96, B says 48, C says 44.1, and D says MP3. And all you have to do is press these and you change formats. Now, what they do when you're recording, I'm not sure, and maybe they do something else, and maybe they do something else in four-track mode that I haven't gotten to yet. They press in, but they don't press in very far. You can feel a slight movement, but they're pretty silent. You could change the bit rate of the MP3 encoder, and I'm guessing that that's what you do in the menus. Across from the A button on the left-hand side, which is almost at the top of the recorder, is a similar button sort of on the rounded edge of the front of the right-hand side, and that is the record button. And it operates much as it does in the Edirol. Press it once and you're in monitor mode. And if you've got headphones on, you can hear what you're doing. Press it again and you're in record. Now, here's the thing. It's kind of like the buttons on the left-hand side. Unlike the Edirol, where there is a nice click when you press the button and you can actually feel it go down, this record button doesn't move all that much. If you press it really hard, well, you don't have to press it hard, but pressing it hard, you're pretty sure it is down. You don't feel it move that much, but you got to figure it's sort of, if you're going to press it that hard, it's going to work. So press it once, you go into monitor mode. Press it twice, you go into record, just like on the Edirol. Press it again, and you stop recording. So there's no stop, but you can press the record button a third time to get out of record. You can also press another button, which I haven't talked about, on the front of the recorder, which is the joystick, or what I'm calling the joystick, which is pretty much in the middle of, well, it's lower middle of the front of the recorder. It's basically, you put the end, you could put the end of your finger in it, and there's an indent. And on both right and left and top and bottom, there's a little line, so you can actually feel where you push to turn it right, left, up, and down. You can press the up part of that to also get out of record. That is also how you get into play. It doesn't start playing the file at that point. It just pops out of record. To play the file, you simply press that button again, the upper part of that dial, and you play the particular file. And pressing the button to the left goes back one track. Pressing it to the right goes forward one track, just like a CD. And if you hold it down, it skips forward quickly, scanning through the file, forward or backwards. And that's all that's on the front of the recorder. Now, this does present us with one interesting problem, which is that there is no dedicated stop button on this recorder. You either press the record button to get out of record, and of course we all know the problems with that because there are three different things that the record button does in sequence. It goes into standby mode, starts recording, and stops recording. And one could easily get lost in any one of those positions and forget which one you're in. On the other hand, you could be recording and stop recording by pressing play. Now, if you're listening to headphones, obviously you can monitor all of this. But if you're not, and you're using binaural microphones, and you're not monitoring through headphones, let's say you press play, and you theoretically come out of record. What if you hit the play button accidentally, which is easy to do? Now you're in play, but you don't know that you are, because you're not monitoring. Now you press record. You cannot record while in play. So you think you're in record or standby, but you're really not. So because there is no dedicated stop button, it does pose a few problems. On the back of the recorder, there's nothing. Well, that's not quite right. There is, near the bottom of the back of the recorder, right in the middle, a little rubber foot that keeps it from sliding when you have it sitting on the table. And near the top of the recorder on each side, there are two more little feet. So it's resting on three things if you lay it on the table. The trouble is the top ones are not rubber. They're plastic, just little plastic points that stick out. Why they didn't make that rubber, I have no clue, because if they had made it rubber, it would be quite stationary on the table as you used it and wouldn't slide around a lot. But they saw fit to do a little plastic nib. The battery compartment, oh my. Well, it's interesting. Let's put it that way. It's kind of like the Eddyroll in that it's not easy to get into, but once you get the hang of it, you can. It's almost harder to explain and sounds more complicated than it is when you actually get the hang of it. But on the back of the recorder, right up underneath the microphones, there is a little dip in the recorder, which is about the size of your index finger. And in that dip is a latch. So if you place your finger in that dip and you pull the latch toward you, it clicks. And there's a piece of plastic that comes out a little bit, unattaching itself from the other part of the recorder. If you then pull up on that piece of plastic, it stops at a certain point, and then you swing it out, and the batteries are inside. And if you're facing the back, the positive battery is up on the left-hand side and down on the right-hand side. In that compartment is also where you find the SD card. And it's a really tight fit. It's behind the batteries toward the actual recorder itself. If you're facing the back, there's the batteries, and then behind that is the recording unit, the main part of it, microphones, etc. And just right at the edge of where the recorder part starts, not the plastic piece that folds down, there's a little slot that the card goes in. It's easy enough to get in, not very easy to get out, because it is so close to everything that you can't put one finger on one side and one on the other. You can push it down, it's spring-loaded, and it pops up a little bit, but not enough to grab it. I finally figured out that if I take my thumbnail and just pull up on it a little bit, because the card I have happens to have some sort of edges, a slot, in it, at the end of the card, I can pull it out. But it's not an easy job to do. If you're familiar with SD cards, you know that on the end that goes in first, on one side of the card, there's some little nibs cut out. Those nibs go toward the main recorder housing. It won't go in any other way, so you're not going to put it in wrong. But SD cards are somewhat finicky, and if they're tight, you sort of think, oh God, am I going to break the points off? But it goes in pretty easily, and you press it down, and it clicks and stays in. Then you fold the battery door back toward the unit, push it up as far as it'll go, get it lined up with the sides of the recorder, and then push it straight down, and the latch clicks, and you got your battery and your card in. Now, as I alluded to earlier, this does have some four-track features, and I haven't read anything about it except that I know that one of the things you can do is to record four tracks and then copy the third and fourth track back to the first two, so that you now have all four tracks in one, and now you can record another track 3 and 4, I believe, and dump that back to track 1 and 2, so you can continue adding to what you've recorded. I don't know anything about that, so we'll save that for another time. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we get to the menus. Well, they're interesting. There are two different menus on this recorder, both accessed by the joystick on the front of the recorder. Press it straight in, and you're in more of a utility menu where you deal with files and formatting, etc. Press only the bottom fourth of it down, and you're in the input menu. The menus do wrap, at least the first level of menus, but there are two ways to cause them to come back to the top. One, you turn the recorder off and on, and when you've turned it off and on, the first menu you get to is the menu at the top, which happens to be microphone, a choice between internal and external mic. Or you can futz with the menus all you want and change this and change that and put the recorder in record, and then when you've stopped, interestingly enough, you're back at the top level menu when you want to go into the menus. So it's not totally impossible to get to where you want to go. Now there's one important thing to remember here. You can either operate these menus outside of the monitor mode of the recorder, but as you remember, I said that if you pressed record, you could actually monitor the sound. And if you press the bottom fourth of the joystick and get into the input menu while you're in record monitor, you can hear exactly what you're changing. So when you change the limiter, you hear it. When you change the compressor, you hear it, etc., etc. Kind of nice. Now, there are two ways you can deal with these menus. You get into them, as I said, by using the joystick on the front of the recorder. Once you're in them, you use the jog dial on the right-hand side of the recorder to move up and down. First menu, for example, is mic. If you press enter, or press the jog dial in, and from now on I'll refer to that as enter, you're in that menu. What you're on when you go in, as the default, is internal mic. You go up one, and you're on external mic. Now, you can either press the middle of the joystick, and you're totally out of menus, and if that's what you want to do, you can do that, and it accepts the last thing you put in. You don't have to press OK on any of the choices. And in some ways, that's a problem, because if you accept something you don't want, I'm not sure how you get out, how you cancel. So what I do, for example, is I press the bottom part of the joystick. I'm in the input menu. I'm on microphone. I press enter. Let's say I want external microphone. I go up one. I press enter. Now I'm out of that menu, but I'm still in the menus. I haven't been taken completely out. I've simply been taken back to the mic choice. So if, for example, I jog dial up one and press enter, I'm on, I'm not sure what it's called, but it's where you can select limiter off, compression, or limiter. It defaults to limiter off. Go up one, you're on compression. Go up another, you're on limiter on. Press enter or press in on the jog dial. Now you're back out to the menu you happen to be on, which is the one I couldn't remember the name of. So that's basically the way to get around the menus. And it has some very interesting options, which we'll talk more about later. The other menu, by pressing the joystick straight in, takes you into, as I said, things like file, format, etc. I haven't played much with this except to discover, to my frustration, that when you're on a file and you want to delete it, you press the joystick in, and I can't remember if you are actually on file or whether you have to go up one, but anyway, you get on file, you press enter, but you're no longer on that file. You're on the first file in the blasted list. So deleting a file that you want to delete could be interesting. I find that I basically put what I want to put on here and then format the drive. Now the manual says you have to format the drive in your recorder. I went for a long time by simply formatting the card in the computer. You put it in the recorder, and it puts the necessary folders on, just like it does on the R1. And so you go off and you record, and you're fine. I decided at one point to format the card on the computer, and discovered that it did not format in FAT32 as the card was in. It formatted in FAT. It seems to work in both, But it did put an extra folder on the file when I formatted it in my computer, and that's one of the four-track folders, which might have actually been added in the boot-up process on my non-formatted card if I had been in four-track mode, because you can switch between two-track and four-track mode, and I happen to be in two-track or stereo mode. By the way, one bit of an aside, I just copied the files from this recorder to my computer and have a couple comments. First of all, I took out the card, put in my card reader, and it copied all that I have done thus far on this podcast in about 30 seconds. I then copied it from the recorder by using the USB port, and I didn't time it because I didn't think it was going to take that long, but it took at least 5 minutes. So it's a very slow copy when you're using the computer. And I don't know how much battery drain it gives you, but there's quite a significant difference. By the way, to copy files from the recorder, unfortunately, you don't just plug in the USB port. Doesn't work. Doesn't do a thing. If, however, you plug in the USB port, turn on the recorder, it goes to the place in the menu where you need to be. So all you need to do is arrow down once on the jog dial, press the jog dial in, jog dial being thing on side, press jog dial in, and you hear ba-doom, connect to your computer. So, there you go. Now why, you might say, as did I, don't they just let you plug your computer into this recorder and have it go ba-doom and connect? Well, the reason is, this recorder also serves as a way to record directly onto your computer. So, it isn't just a USB mass storage device. You can connect your recorder to your computer, have it give you the menu that it gives you. Remember I said you went down and pressed enter to connect to the computer as a drive. I'm assuming, although I haven't played with it, that if you simply press enter where you are, you can now record and have it actually be recorded on the hard drive of your computer. At least that's what it's supposed to do. So, therefore, the choice. Now, of course, one could have done this differently. One could have set this up as a choice in the menus, so when it connected to your computer, it did one or the other, but, I guess people do things different ways. Let's try some of these menu options. I am recording with the limiter on. I'm going to start speaking loudly now. So I assume that if I talk loudly, it is going to turn down the volume. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. Now, there's a fair amount of headroom on this recorder anyway, given the volume that I am on the internal mic on the highest mic attenuation position, I'm probably coming in someplace at around 15 dB, unless I yell really loudly. So we've got a bit of headroom to play with even before we get to the limiter, which is kind of nice. So when I spoke loudly, I assume it wasn't distorted. We'll do some more things later to give you some better idea about the limiter. The compressor is just ridiculous. I'm not even going to try it. It doesn't work. What a compressor does is basically raise the volume of the recording if it doesn't hear any sound, turn it down when it hears too much sound. So if I were to talk really softly, it would bring the volume up to match what I'm doing, and you would hear no volume difference. However, let me do it. Now I'm on compressor, and the heater is on in the background. And hear what it's doing? When I stop talking, it is bringing the volume up. So when I talk really softly, I would be, except that even the furnace is knocking it down. Now, I've actually tried doing this on lower mic attenuation, and it still has the same problem. So, I'm not sure why, if at all, one would use this. So, let's don't. Now I'm back on limiter. Sounds much better. One of the choices in the menu, in fact, you go up one from the limiter compressor choice, and you get to something called mic modeling. And this actually replicates the sounds of different microphones. I'm sure they do it by simply using different EQ in the internal microphone, and I don't believe you can do this with an external microphone. But what's also neat about this, and any of the other input menus, is that you can operate them while in record. Not only in record standby, but actually in record. When you're recording, if you press the bottom of the joystick down, you go into the menus. I'm now at mic modeling, and I'm going to turn on the microwave fan here, so we'll have something besides my voice to compare the sounds of these mics with. A little lower speed might help. So this is the default microphone. I'm now going to go up one. And this is the Shure SM57 microphone. I can certainly tell a difference. A little less bass. Interesting increase in the treble. Now this microwave fan doesn't have a lot of bass, so we won't hear that much. We go up one more. That's a very strange sounding microphone. It's the Sennheiser B something or other. I can't remember the model number. I should go look it up for you. We go up one more from here, and we get to the Neumann U87. Obviously, this microphone can't represent the Neumann microphone exactly, because it's probably only a $50 microphone. That is, the internal mic is. Go up to the last one, which is the AKG-414. And now you have more bass, more treble, just a wider spread. So it's equalized this to sound like what it thinks the AKG-414 is. And of course, the AKG-414 has lots of different model numbers within it, the EB, the BLS, the XL2, the XLS, etc. So I'm not sure which one this is. So we go back through all of these and go back to the default microphone. Now we're back to the default. And if you want to get out of menus, you simply press the joystick in on the front of the recorder, and now you're totally out of menus and back into record. Of course, I had the windscreen on, which damped the upper end to some extent, so had I not had it on, you might have heard more difference. But, too late now. I guess I could do it over, but you get the picture. Let's see how much difference in frequency response the windscreen effects. Let me turn on the microwave fan again. And I'm now going to take the windscreen off and see what difference you hear. Now I'm going to put it back on. So as you can see, there is some difference. So the microphone sounds would have sounded a little different had I not had the windscreen on. So now here's what I mean by I have the windscreen off. I'm going to open the door going into my studio and hear the wind. I'm even just going to walk through the house and you hear wind in the microphone. So this is not a good recorder for outdoor use at all, even with the windscreen on. Well, let's go, I have the windscreen back on now. Let's go outside. There may or may not be any wind out there and see what it sounds like outside. I could check the mail while I'm out here. Oh my, it's raining. Well, I guess it's not really raining. Dripping. The microphone is pointing away from me. Wow, these are really directional mics. Now it's pointing toward me. Here comes a little breeze. That's not bad enough. Unlike the omnidirectional mics on the Eddyroll, these are very directional. Okay, let's slam the door here. That didn't seem to peg the limiter, and here's the big metal door. And that didn't either. All right, it's a day or so later now, and what kinds of things have I found? One thing I found is battery power. 4 hours on 2 AA batteries. I'm assuming that that means with the internal mic. This will also give you phantom power. I have not turned that on yet, but I'm sure that with phantom power on, you're not going to get nearly that much time. But for just going and using this microphone, 4 hours on 2 AA batteries isn't bad. I did not see any mention of its using rechargeable batteries. I can try it. After all, I may have to send this one back anyway because of the hum or the whistle, wrong pitch. So, who knows, I might as well just try the batteries. But I'll go look in the manual now and see what else I can find. Well, speaking of the noise, I have the answer. I just got my second unit. And guess what? It has it also. So I need to check with the developer and see. They've had this reported before. A kind of pulsing sound they found. And that's exactly what happens in MP3. It's no louder than it is now, but it does pulse. And what's interesting is that with each different sampling rate, it's a different pitch. 48 is 1, 96 is 1, 44.1 is 1. Actually, when you get to 96, you can hardly hear it, but who wants to record at 96? So I'm going to have to see, is this something that can be fixed with an update? Or is it a physical problem with the recorder? My guess is it's the latter, but I don't really know. It is not so loud. Well, okay, I'm in a room that's pretty, that's not noisy, but there's a lot of computers on in here. Let's go into the bedroom where it's really quiet, close the door, and listen to the noise. It's certainly there. But when I was out recording over the weekend, in situations where I was recording a family get-together, there was hardly ever a time when you noticed it, because there's often enough noise going on that you're not even going to hear this. It does show up when you have microphones plugged in that have a lower level output than the internal mic. And by the way, this internal microphone has a much higher level output than some of the others on the Eddyroll, for example, and the MicroTrack. So I'm not sure what to tell you about the noise. You've heard it. It disappears when you plug in the AC, but who wants to do that all the time? All right, we're back from reading part of the manual, and this is what I've learned. There is no pause. Well, think of that. I guess you just have to mumble and correct what you've mumbled and go right on, or else edit it with some other sound editing equipment or software. Well, I've learned a couple extra things as a result of reading more in the manual, so let me come back and give you those. First of all, you can set the recording levels by increments. It is in the menu, but it's pretty easily done. And in fact, it goes from 127 down to 0 in 1 dB increments. And you can have the limiter on as well. So you can have the limiter on, but have the volume really high. And so almost everything you do probably knocks down the limiter. Or you can have the limiter off, and it'll distort. Or you can have the volume turned way down, and the limiter probably won't do much at all. So you can have your cake and eat it, too. The other thing I've learned, which is very interesting, is that you can indeed set the record levels manually in addition to the 3 microphone input level switches I talked about earlier. If, when you go into the input menu, you go down one, you're on level input, and you press the jog dial in, and if you're recording with the external mic, you then can select the track you want. Channel 1, channel 2, whatever. If you're in 4-track mode, you got 2 other channels. Unfortunately, in external mic, you operate one channel at a time. So you have to select channel one, or the left channel, set its microphone volume, and then select channel two and select its microphone volume. The internal mic's a little easier. You simply press inner to get into the settings. Press it one more time to bypass the channels, which don't exist if you're using the internal mic because they're synchronized. And then you simply press the jog dial up and down to raise and lower the volume. And like a lot of MIDI devices and keyboards, the upper level is 127 and the lower level is 0. However, keep in mind that you have 3 microphone attenuation positions on both the internal mic and the left and right channels of the external mic. So 127 at the highest setting, with the second setting on the attenuation switch being 10 dB below that, and the third setting being 15 below that, then you go down to 0, you've got a lot of mic gain. You basically have 127 plus 25 in terms of totally upper level versus lower level mic input volume. That's a lot of difference. And just as we did with the mic replications, you can do that in record or you can do it in standby. As I may have mentioned before, the internal microphone on this recorder has a lot higher gain than does the microphone on the MicroTrack and the Eddyroll. So you can distort the microphone per se in the highest level of mic attenuation, even if you're below the distortion level of the recorder. So let's, for example, turn the mic attenuation switch down one click, or 10 dB, which is what I've done. Now, what I've discovered is that if you now raise this 10 dB, you have no more noise in the recording than you did when it was at the high input selection. So you could record in this position all the time and then just normalize if you were on SoundForge or any of the other software editors. Let me move something out of the way here. And I'm going to stick this recorder down almost in the sink and run the garbage disposal and let's see what happens to the limiter. Actually, I'm not looking at the volumes, obviously, because I don't have this on SoundForge or Studio Recorder, but I'm not even sure we got up to 0. So there's a lot more headroom here without the concomitant raise in noise floor level. As I think I might have mentioned earlier, but maybe not, the microphone preamp does make a noise on this recorder. There is a hiss, but it is a low enough frequency hiss that, unlike the Eddyroll and the MicroTrack, it doesn't sound like tape hiss. It is really not as noticeable because it's on a lower frequency. So what other noise can I record? Let's turn the microwave fan on again and put the microphone right up against the fan. Now that's a pretty loud fan. Now, here's the test. What about, now this is a very strange sound, what about rattling something like silverware, which has a very high pitch to it? On high mic input, this would be distorted, even though the microphone may not be high enough in volume to distort the sound. But because of the high output of the microphone, it might sound distorted. And now we're back up to the high input selection on the mic attenuation switch. Let's try the garbage disposal again. See what it does with the limiter. I suspect it's going to get to 0 at this point, but let's just give it a try. I just had a horrible thought while I was doing that. This windscreen sets on the microphone pretty snugly. In fact, that's, I think, one of the reasons why there is a wire covering over the microphone. Not a solid wire covering, but a sort of framework. It holds the windscreen on. However, it would not have been good had the windscreen come off and gone down the garbage disposal. That would have been hard to explain. Now, there's one last thing I want to do before we finish this recording. I'm now recording in MP3. Obviously, it's going to be reconverted into MP3 again when I save this file as a podcast. This recorder will allow you to record anywhere from 112 kbps to 320. I'm recording at 192, which is one step above what is normally seen as the default for CD quality recordings, which is 160. I could not find an MP3 quality on the Eddyroll that I liked. This one is quite different. One of the things I did on the Eddyroll was to hiss, and you could hear it go so. We'll see what that does. And let's do what we just did with the water and see if we get any problems with that. Let's run the water and the garbage disposal. Actually, I'm going to take the windscreen off just to be safe. So we're actually going to hear crisper water. Now that's a sound which on the Eddyroll would have gone and sort of waved in and out. I, of course, haven't heard it on this recorder yet. It might do the same thing. But I guess we'll both find out. Oh, wow. You're going to like this. As I said earlier, I had gotten the second recorder. And they both make the noise. However, I had changed the kbps on one of the recorders to 192. That's not the one I was using. I just looked at the properties in this MP3 file that I just recorded, and it was on the new recorder, which I hadn't changed, which is to say the kbps rate was, friends, 128. Not a bad sound for MP3 kbps 128. Not a bad sound at all. One could get a lot of stuff on here at that rate. There is a postscript to this podcast. I'm now in an echoey room. Actually, I'm in my garage. The that you're hearing is supposed to be there. I just got off the phone with the developer of this recorder. I talked to people in tech support. I got a person who had the gall to tell me that the I was hearing was a part of the noise floor that they knew was there all the time. And they suggest using it with the AC adapter plugged in. Then why, I asked him, did they bother making it battery powered? So, I guess that's the answer to that. If you want to hear whistling in your recordings, buy this one. If you don't, stay away from it, because it ain't going to get any better. And he didn't really seem to care. He didn't really think that was a problem. I do. It is true, as I go back in the house where it's a little noisier, and that's why I wanted to make that part in the garage. It is true, and as I've said before, if there is a fair amount of noise in the background, like even now, you're probably not going to notice that. And my furnace fan is reasonably quiet. So it's not that there's a lot of noise that is overriding this whistle. It's still there in my headphones. Would I notice it in my speakers? Would I notice it if I didn't know it was there? Good question. But the bottom line is, it's a part of what they think is noise floor. Well, I tell you what, I have heard lots of interesting noise floor in my life, but I haven't heard one that whistles. So, get your AC adapters ready, folks. Can you tell that I'm angry? Okay, I guess this is all for now. And now we return to the program already in progress, which is the end of this podcast. All right, enough playing around for now. This is the end of this podcast. I have not covered everything. I will cover more. And if you have questions, please write and let me know, and I will try to answer them. So either send an email to any of the lists that you happen to be on that I'm on, or write to me directly at neal@ravenswood.org, and I'll try to get back to you. I'm going to also put the text version of this manual up on my FTP site, which is ftp://ftp.ravenswood.org. Ravenswood spelled the same way, obviously. There's a manual folder there, and it has, I think it still has the Eddie Roll manual and a couple other manuals, and I'll put this one there, hopefully by the time this podcast gets up. So this is Neal Ewers in Madison, Wisconsin, saying so long until next time.